Product Breakfast Club. Welcome to the Product Breakfast Club.
Welcome. I am your host, Jake Knapp. I am in San Francisco.
I'm Jonathan Courtney, and I am in sunny Berlin.
Sunny. Oh, how about that?
It's actually sunny. This is actually the first time that we've been doing the podcast together, and this is now 3 or 4 months in, and it's the first time that it's been sunny while I've been recording this podcast. Seriously, it's mind-blowing.
It has been a real glimpse into life in Berlin, or what you call life there.
My sad existence here in the brown sky. Yeah, people come to Berlin in the summer and they're like, oh my God, Berlin is the most amazing place in the world. And then they move here and then they experience the first winter and they're like, what have I done?
Oh yeah. No, I grew up in Washington State and lived for many years in Seattle, and it is the same thing there. The summers are fantastic. People come there and then it just suckers you right in there.
So there are new people, hundreds of new people every week tuning in. So maybe we should give a quick glimpse into what this podcast is about, Jake.
Do you know what it's about? I'm not sure what it's about. I definitely think we're trying to promote ourselves. That's one part of it.
Yeah.
Self-promotion, brand building. That's definitely a big part of it.
Welcome to the Jonathan and Jake brand building experience.
It's not so often about products. It is called the Product Breakfast Club. We were calling to get audio set up and I was eating breakfast then, but I'm done. It's a club. I mean, in that there's the two of us. So that's
welcome.
Kind of a club. And everybody who's listening, the clubbers, all the clubbers out there listening are in the club. But I'm not sure what it's about. I guess we talk about design sprints because you and I both do those. Probably talk about them more than anybody wants to hear. But we talk about other stuff. I don't know. What do you think it's about?
I think it's not what it's about. It's about who it's for. I think that the product... Yeah, see how I turned that around? I hate when people do that.
It's about the people.
Yeah, I hate when people do that to me, though.
Wait, just a little sidebar. I was interviewing for a job at Microsoft, and you go through this whole day of interviews, and at the end, there's like the really hard interview with... It's like the boss. It's like a boss level in video game. And the boss, she's like interviewing me, and I go through the whole interview with her, and at the end, she's like... And I've been there for all day. 8 hours, like 8 1-hour interviews. I'm toast, you know, and I'm so nervous. I'm like in college, not even out of college. And I know this is the hardest interview. And I like get through to the end and she's like, you forgot to ask the clarifying question of like, when was the project due? Like it was this like sample problem. Like, you know, how would you handle doing this? And I had like, oh, I do this and then I do that. And she's like, you forgot to ask when the project was due. And actually like got to know this person later. And I realized that was just fine. Like that was her tone. But at the time I was like, Oh, like what a sucker punch. Anyway, that's kind of what you did to me just now. You didn't even ask the right question, only not after 8 hours.
Yeah. But before I even answer my part of it, I think what I really hate is when people, you know, when you ask them something or when they're asking you a question and they say, you know, I think the real question is why, because they've watched Simon Sinek's video on TED. I'm like, just back off and relax, okay? You don't know what you're talking about. You watched this Simon Sinek video. Like, seriously, I know a designer is going to piss me off when the first thing they do is refer to Simon Sinek's why thing. And I'm like, oh, just go away, back off. Okay, so who is the Product Breakfast Club for? The Product Breakfast Club podcast is, at least for what I can see, if I'm looking at our audience, because we're kind of communicating with them, it's generally either designers, you know, product designers, people interested in product design, who want like a glimpse into maybe what's happening in the industry when we sometimes talk about it. Maybe they want to hear about our experiences. You know, Jake, you've got like 20, 30, 50 years of design experience. They also just want to be entertained, right? Because it's not a serious design podcast. Most of them out there, there's a lot of amazing ones, but they're also very serious. You know, they're not like just kind of entertaining shows. So I think designers looking for a good time.
Designers looking for a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's blowing off some steam.
In the club. They're just coming to the club. I think that's what it's for. But it's also another whole segment of people, which is kind of amazing, which are like innovation managers and innovation coaches at very large and potentially very old companies. And this is something that's like been super crazy for me, meeting these people who are maybe like VPs at super crazy huge companies that you know, and they're talking to me about the Product Breakfast Club. And I'm like, what? You actually listen to this? It's crazy. Like Rob was in New York last week and he was with a really amazing famous company. And they were talking to him about an episode of the Product Breakfast Club. And he was like, I can't believe this. I can't believe people are actually listening to this. And it still shocks me, even though I can see the stats. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's astonishing. I mean, if you're listening right now, don't you know all the other good podcasts? There's so many. You could be listening to like Serial or like
Boring,
a startup podcast that's really good. There's so many better podcasts. It's amazing. Thank you. We appreciate it, though. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much. We are humbled. We are very humbled.
We're not humbled. Actually, I think we're the opposite of humbled. I feel like we're just emboldened. We're getting even worse. The more people listen, the more we're just rambling, and yeah, it's crazy. Although, actually, I'll say I listened to our episode last week, and it sounded pretty good. I feel like we're kind of getting the hang of the podcast.
Yeah.
We might lose it this week, but last week, we were good.
No, I think we've gotten to a point now where the audio isn't shitty. We have like a rapport where we can speak about nothing, and it does sound kind of interesting. It's weird when I listen back to the episodes, and I'm like, okay, that was kind of interesting, even though I felt like we didn't really get to the point when we were making the episode. I just feel like there's a good vibe going on.
It is a solid vibe on the Product Breakfast Club. And you know what? I think to just kind of sum it all up, what's the Product Breakfast Club about? Vibe. It's just vibe. All about vibe.
The word vibe, singular vibe.
And if you're listening and you're not a designer or an innovation VP, you know what? You're welcome in the club. Just come in and share the vibe. Just
yeah, sit over there. Yeah. There's a vibe pool in the back. Get in. Get your feet wet and dirty because it's a pool full of mud. Speaking of mud... I've got a few topics to talk about this week. Jake, I've got big news for you.
Okay.
Huge news.
Hit me.
I think we need to call, we need to actually create a theme tune because this is going to be a new part of the podcast
called
The Scoopcast.
Scoopcast.
Yeah. Scoop, 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 scoop,
scoop, scoop,
scoop,
scoop, scoop, scooping it up.
So the cough was part of the...
part of this jingle.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you know that Gmail is getting redesigned?
No, and no, no.
That product you worked on.
I knew that would happen eventually, but I was hoping it wouldn't be for a long time because I worked on Gmail like 10 years ago and it's the same. So I can go to Gmail. Like you look around, sometimes you're in like a coffee shop, somebody's on Gmail. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the same Gmail I worked on. It's so cool because... it's like frozen in time. Frozen
not
in
anymore.
Time.
Not anymore.
Okay. That sucks.
It's a deep cut. Okay. So the new Gmail is pretty interesting because it is the first time in a very long time that it got a complete overhaul.
What's going on? Is it out?
No, it's not out. It's also not clear when it is going to come out because it was leaked.
It was leaked.
Oh, it was leaked. God. Yeah.
Just to be clear, if Google lawyers are listening, I had nothing to do with that.
No, Jake had nothing to do with
this. I didn't even know. I mean, you heard my reaction. I can't fake that. I didn't even know.
Thanks for the scoop, Jake. So it was all Jake. So basically, it just is a much cleaner look. It's very round.
Round?
It's round. Like
I'm going to take a look.
Take a look at it.
I better look in an incognito window because I don't want that to show up in my browser history.
Yeah, exactly.
Gmail design leak. Okay, so if you're following along at home, which link should I follow here? The Verge?
Hit the Ars Technica one at the top there, I think is a nice one. I think the interesting things about it are that the calendar and the tasks app, Google Keep, are actually integrated directly into the email portion of it, which is super sweet. So you can kind of have an overlay of the calendar while you're working on your emails. I think that's like, for me, the most powerful update to it. And just overall, it looks kind of clean. What's interesting about it is that it's a kind of a new look for Google. It's a new style. It's a new visual style. And it's the visual style that we've seen popping up in the Android preview, Android P. It's kind of hard to say the letter P. And if you look at it, if you kind of Google this, and if you're a designer, if you're interested in it, it is just a new look and feel for Android as well, this Android P thing. It's kind of rounded, okay, very white.
Look, stop, wait, stop, 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 stop. I'm looking at this. I'm looking at the screenshots. People are looking at home. You got my hopes up. I thought this was going to be a big deal. It's a visual redesign. They got
it's
a couple gadgets.
It's not just a visual redesign.
No. I don't want to diminish anybody's work because doing this kind of visual work and doing all of the fit and finish engineering and all the fine-tuned interaction design is hard. It's a big deal. It's beautiful. They've done a beautiful job. It's the same goddamn thing. It looks exactly the same as it did before. It's got the thing,
Jake,
on the left.
You're
it's
just
got
a
messages
fool.
In the middle. It's got the little message popped up over the top. It's the same thing. And
because that works.
Let me tell you something. It's great. It looks lovely. They've done a beautiful job. But this is a huge missed opportunity because we all spend so much time with email.
Mm.
Email is like this old thing people have forgotten about. like a huge amount of our time it takes up, because everybody's like focused on Facebook stealing your data and like all of the stuff about like all the, you know, the notifications on the phone. We talked about that, you know, for a couple episodes. Email is the master. Email is the
center of our lives.
Center of our lives. I'm trying to think of the name of the guy, one of the Star Wars bad guys. Darth Sidious is what it's like. But it's the big thing, kind of behind the scenes, pulling all the strings. But email is this huge thing. And nobody has really taken a credible effort at reworking how email itself works. I want email to work like it does in the movie Her. You're like, talk to the headpiece and it's like, hey, I just went through all your email. I think we can get rid of all of it. But there's like these five you need to deal with. And like, hey, oh, guess what? I already wrote the replies to those. Email should be more like that. Like, it's got to like help you live your life, like help you get to do the things that are most important to you, like figure out what really matters. And I look at this and I'm like, kind of when you were describing it, I mean, I wasn't really listening to you that closely.
That's true.
Guess you were saying it was a visual design, but it's just, I want them to like reinvent email. You know, they're Google,
yeah.
You know, they're smart people there. I think I wish that this was more ambitious, honestly. And it got into how email just like dominates our attention. And is this really effectively not efficient way to shape your day? But everybody uses email as a to-do list. I'm guilty of doing this all the time. I think they could do better. From what I see on the screenshots, it just looks the same.
So. Do you know about Google Inbox?
Yeah, I do. And I think Google Inbox, it was an effort to go in that direction, but it's a compromise. And, you know,
right.
I think the truth is actually that for Google, although they certainly have the technical capacity to do something really remarkable, where you actually have some of the promise of what machine learning, what artificial intelligence can do. Some of the things that Google could do inside email, I think probably, and maybe not today, but with a few years of work, could be really remarkable. But Google also has this problem that they have a lot of other efforts. There's a lot of other things going on inside the company. And they also have a ton of people. There's like over a billion people using Gmail. So
right.
You also can't be like, oh, guess what? We're going to turn Gmail into this crazy voice interface. Like, I don't know if that would really be the best thing, but we can't like totally transform it because people have all these expectations. And I think Inbox, the reason why it's a separate product is probably because it was a bit of an attempt to say, let's break away and have some experimental ground, but it's still more or less email.
Yeah.
It's not dramatically different. And I think it would be hard to get that right. The thing I'm describing, this like magical mystery thing I want, make email smarter, better, like make my calendar smarter, but like really make it like not V1.0000001, but like make it like V20. Like, what should Gmail and calendar look like in like the year 2035? And then how do we make that now? It's kind of disappointing that it's just like a baby step to me.
Did you see, this is kind of related to it, I guess, in terms of all the machine learnings. If you want to create what you're talking about, you need like some crazy machine learning AI stuff going on there, reading your emails, making decisions for you and making suggestions for you. And it's super interesting to see Google in some ways going like crazy in terms of demonstrating that technology. I saw something today, which was Google machine learning. One of their algorithms was able to look at a video of two people talking over each other really loudly.
Like us, kind of like this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. They were able to use machine learning to completely isolate one voice or the other. It was like almost no distortion and zero sound from the other person. This is super, super interesting as well. Like totally unrelated to the Gmail thing, but in terms of the kind of crazy technological things that they are testing and putting out there, they're trying crazy shit. But this does, of course, Gmail, the thing that's going to come out is just going to be a small iteration, because maybe it would just be too crazy to try to get something like that into a crazy huge product like Gmail.
You know, I actually think that a lot of the stuff that would make email dramatically better is not crazy technical. But it breaks the model. You need to get people to identify what they're going to do with the message. And like I read an email, right? And then it's like, it's read. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to need to do something. Well, maybe I need to send that person a file, or, oh, okay, I need to make a decision about something. This person's asking me if I can help them out with some event, or if I can meet with them or something, and if I can do a call. Okay, I need to decide if I'm going to do it. But a lot of times with emails, and I know I'm not alone, I open up the email, I read it, and I'm like, oh, okay, I need to kind of set aside a time to do that. Or maybe I've kind of finally learned that I need to do some of these things in batches. So this is about doing a call with somebody, I'm going to wait and like decide all together when I'm doing all my calls and kind of be in kind of decision-making mode about that. you should be able to actually just with the interface help people batch stuff and identify what the task is so that I don't have to re-unpack it when I go back into that message. Mm. And that actually doesn't require any kind of sophisticated computer smarts. It could be augmented by the computer suggesting tasks for you. You know, I think that's the kind of thing that could make email a lot better. I think that a simple thing that would be huge would be to ask you before you get into email, when you're first signing up for the account, or when you're first setting up after the redesign launches, when you're first setting up, to say, when do you want to check your email? What's the latest day you can possibly wait to check your email?
Okay. I like that.
How long do you need? Okay. And make you commit to a schedule up front and say, okay, we're going to run this for a week and then we'll try it. We'll ask you how it goes then. And then lock you out on every device during those times when it's not time to do it. Because actually, there's a study that people, they're actually more effective. They answer emails more effectively, faster, and they feel way less stressed and way better about what's going on when they only check their email and reply 3 times a day. And 3 times a day is not crazy, but if you like mandated that, you'd have to be really opinionated. You have to build the product and say, we're going to be really opinionated. We're not going to try to compete with traditional Gmail or, you know, Outlook or all these things. We're going to try to make something that's actually, if you use this, you're committing to a different way of working, but it's going to be better than the way it was before. It's, in a way, it's like what Slack has said, forget email. This is different. Somebody needs to do that in the direction of, this will open up more time for you to get into like a highly focused zone where you can actually get stuff done or work with your colleagues or whatever, but you're not just serving and reacting to this screen. And I don't think that Google keeps the old Gmail around because they want to distract people. Like, that's certainly not the case. It's just very hard to break away from that paradigm because people are so comfortable with it and used to it. And because it's hard to know if this new thing, which would take a lot of effort, would actually work. You know what I'm describing? Like, of course. I think it would work, but I don't know.
Yeah. They're going to, I guess, launch this and talk about this in like 21 days at Google I.O. That's going to be like 8th to the 10th of May. But I guess you just sound extremely disappointed. I probably should have just like started it with, hey, there's this shitty new version of Gmail coming out.
No, it's cool. So- no, it's better. It's better. I mean, what's going to happen is the refresh will come out and I'll see it. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, this is much nicer.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you said it, I was like, I got my hopes up about this dream I have.
That's fine.
I might be the only person who has that dream.
I don't think so.
But you know, the other thing, I wonder, and I'm sure people have talked about this, but since this is new to me, I'm experiencing it all in a childlike state of wonder. Do you think that they leaked it on purpose to mitigate the reactions people have? People are always have change aversion, you know, when something new comes out. And I wonder if the leak is meant to kind of mitigate that. Like, you could intentionally leak a redesign so people have the chance to see it.
Yeah.
You even have the chance to like maybe make a couple tweaks. And especially the people who are going to be the most intense about it, the people who are reading The Verge and Ars Technica, like you, would already have seen it by the time it comes out. And maybe that's intentional. Could be. Would be kind of clever.
I mean, I know that people who read, you know, The Verge and Ars Technica, it doesn't matter how good a redesign is. It doesn't matter what it looks like. Everyone's going to hate it no matter what. Like, it really doesn't matter. It's kind of a shame.
I mean, listen to me. You heard my reaction.
But that's always the reaction, right? When a new product from Apple comes out, people are usually like, what? They had such a big opportunity to do something really cool, but look what they did. But Jake, we've worked in large companies.
I have worked on Gmail.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, probably better than anybody else.
It's hard.
Why this stuff doesn't happen.
Oh, it's super hard to do. I doubt this is the case. But if you work on Gmail and you're listening to this,
Jake is a bastard.
I'm the worst. This looks like good work. It looks like excellent work. And it's not, it's apples and oranges. What I'm talking about is a Skunkworks project that should be going on somewhere inside Google.
It probably is.
Should be going on inside Apple. Somebody needs to solve this. A huge opportunity to just do good for humans. I hope somebody's trying to do this. And it's not what this is about. That's actually not what this is about. Look, there's a billion people who use Gmail. Let's make their day better every day. Let's make this product a little better. And, exactly. And so I think it looks like good work.
And I think that's also something where what you spoke about was kind of related to the productivity and distraction angle that you think people should take, that companies should take this angle of helping people be more productive by taking learnings from, I don't know, experiments about how productive work should be done.
Well, and also just opinions. I mean, you know, studies are helpful, but you also just, you have to have strong opinions. And I also think this is something I learned from our buddy, Jason Fried.
Dirty Jason.
Dirty Jason, as opposed to Clean Jason, who is our editor. Dirty Jason says, I don't like the word productivity. Productivity is kind of like a word for factories, kind of like how fast can we manufacture widgets. Jason says that the word that he likes better is effective. Is it isn't an effective use of your time. And I think that that's a good way to think about what we ought to strive to do. If you're building a tool like this, you ought to strive for how can I make people more effective? Not just doing stuff faster, not just churning through more to-dos, but how can I make it so that every day person uses my product, they're more satisfied with what they do that day? Email is not trying to help you realize your full potential. It's trying to help you be more productive. It's trying to help you move through faster and be a faster reactor. That's not because anybody's being malicious right now, but there's an opportunity to do more. And I can't wait till somebody does it. I can't wait.
But you just touched on something interesting. And I'm just taking advantage of the fact that our last few episodes were so short. So I want to ramble a little bit here.
Yeah, let's do it. People can, you know what, when you start listening to the podcast, you can see the timestamp. We're now going to have some podcasts that are short, some that are long. This is a long one.
Yeah, damn right. Scoopcast is still going on. So you mentioned a couple of times, you mentioned the word opinionated. Do you think that large companies, once they reach a certain size and once they have a certain market penetration, do you think that they can be? I saw your face smiling there. I'm trying to have a serious conversation here, Jake. Do you think that they can be opinionated? And
Words emphasized.
Do you think that companies like that actually can be opinionated once they reach that sort of level where everyone on the planet is using it?
That's a good point. They can be, but they have to have a really unique leader. They have to have leadership that is opinionated and that's willing to fail. And people have to be willing to like screw up. And people always talk about Amazon as an example of this. Big, huge, giant company who do things. They are actually quite innovative and they fail also. Like I was talking to somebody recently. They were talking about like Nokia as an example of like really just falling on their butts when the iPhone came out and not reacting to that, not being able to compete. People talk about BlackBerry a lot as an example of like, oh man, the iPhone just crushed them. But the interesting thing is Amazon, who everybody talks about how innovative they are. Amazon, when the iPhone came out, I mean, they came out with their own smartphone a couple years ago. I don't know if anybody remembers it.
Such a piece of shit.
It's a piece. It's a total piece. And they were wrong. Whatever the plan was with that, there were smart people working on that, you know, and I'm sure it was actually a smart plan, but sometimes you're going to be wrong. You're not going to be able to hit it right if you take these risks. You know, I think that Amazon's a good example of that. And part of it, I think, is that Jeff Bezos is weird.
Yeah.
I think you follow MG Siegler.
Yeah.
Yeah. So MG had tweeted a couple of days ago. He's like, look, like Jeff Bezos has just started tweeting. And it's like how everybody used to use Twitter in 2008. And I went and clicked through and looked at it. And it was weird. Like he was like, here's me having pancakes with the quarterback of the Seahawks. The guy's just like, he's not in touch with reality, but it's working. It's working for him to not be in touch with reality. You know, on the other end, there are folks who are more in touch with reality and are able to be opinionated. But in a big company, it's pretty hard, you know?
Yeah,
and,
totally.
You know, you talked about meeting Astro Teller. And I remember being in a building at Google and seeing Astro Teller walking up a staircase wearing roller skates. Actually, successfully. Maybe you saw that. I mean, no problem. Actually, the guy was like, he was handling it.
Can
no problem.
You quickly tell people who Astro Teller is? Oh, yeah. Because I think I didn't even mention it in the last episode.
Astro Teller runs Google X. So he's a super smart guy. And I'm sure if you search for Astro Teller, so there's only one. He probably has a ton of talks and things. Super smart guy. But, you know, a character, total character. And I think inside Google, there's people who are characters who are in leadership positions and people who are just like, in touch with reality, smart people too. I'm not saying Astro, if you're listening, I'm not saying you're not in touch with reality. I think you're in touch with many realities. You know, the guy's on a whole other playing field. But you got to have a little bit of craziness and you got to have people who are willing to fail and be weird. And it's also hard just because success has its own inertia and weight to it. You got a billion users. That's stressful, actually.
Yeah. That's such an interesting conversation. I was listening to a podcast today by Steve Blank and he was talking about like, basically, why people leave companies, why entrepreneurs generally don't stick around in companies. One of the things he was talking about was like, is there going to ever be a way that companies, even companies like Google or Apple or Facebook, can create environments in which entrepreneurs and slightly crazy people like Elon Musk would ever feel comfortable working in? And they actually went through this one story of how Marissa Meyer used to hire at Google.
Oh, yeah. I saw this article. That he wrote.
It's really cool. And how it was super focused on like SAT scores and like the specific different scores that people got in college and like really focused on charts and numbers. Whereas someone like Elon Musk would have completely like flunked something like that and would have never gotten into Google in the first place. And that actually all of Google's super successful products are all products that came from acquisitions, like Google Maps came from something called Keyhole or something like that. Android was an acquisition. And the reason is because they had these crazy people running them who would never have actually gotten in as an employee to Google. And I wonder, is that also like part of the problem once the company grows to a certain size? Not only do the leaders have to calm down a bit, or they kind of leave and it's not founder-led anymore?
Well, I did think that article, while very interesting, oversimplified Google.
Right.
You know, one thing about Google is those examples are cherry-picked and they're not looked at with a very nuanced perspective. What are the most successful products Google has built? Well, Google Search is number one. They built that. AdWords is definitely part of the success of Google Search, also built by Google.
Yeah.
Gmail, pretty successful product we were just talking about.
What's Gmail?
You know, and that was an in-house 20% project. Very successful, long-lived product. Google Hangouts, that's one I know intimately well. That was one that actually, though, the leadership on that, one of the guys I worked with when that was the 20% project had come in as an acquisition from a startup. So, but you look at a product like Hangouts is a good example where the product comes in and the seed of it does come from outside. You know, you have also that person who's a founder and who knows how to build things. But it grows inside an environment where you have people who can work together and who are high performing and who like to execute and are comfortable working for somebody else and also excited about working on something that can have a really large scale. So that product is built and scaled up inside the Google environment. YouTube came into Google, very successful product, but it has become hugely successful inside the Google environment. Android, not a big successful product when it came in, was made huge and successful inside the Google environment. Maps, you know, Keyhole is not a household name before it came in.
I love Keyhole. I hate that they changed the name to Maps.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You look at what those things were when they came in, they're worlds different. They're really like productized in a different way. And so is Google's strength necessarily coming up with new? Well, it's hard. It's very hard to come up with new things. And so many new ideas fail. And yeah, like there are advantages, there are ways that a startup can behave that it's very difficult for Google to emulate. Google does some really interesting things recently in trying to foster that sort of, like they have this project called Area 120. And I think you can look it up and see a little bit about how they do it. But just in terms of like trying to set up an environment where teams can kind of have like a startup-like environment and, you know, maybe be rewarded in some way like they would if they were in a startup. I thought that article also made a bunch of really good points. If you go in to work for a big company, you're signing up for a whole different kind of deal. And you're someone who works for yourself. You are saying no to that deal. I have said yes to that deal for a long time and now I'm saying no to it. And
yeah,
there are different things you can accomplish when you're working on your own, when you're independent. And there are things that are much harder to accomplish too. So.
Now, officially, we have rambled deep into a cave.
This is a good ramble.
This is a good ramble.
The Scoopcast had a cave hidden in the back.
We fell down it. Just to like summarize, it started with, you know, there is a new version of Gmail coming out. This also is kind of linked to a new update to the material design language, which has been like basically Google's entire design system for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, which has been insanely successful under Matthias Duarte. I don't know exactly how to say his name.
He started it. I think the guy who runs it now, I don't know if he's still running it or if Matthias is doing other things.
Matthias, I mean, I remember I was working in-house for a telco when that came out, and I was actually working on a style guide for a company, like a digital style guide, and that came out, and I was like, holy crap, that is amazing work that Google just did, like really blew. Everyone was like, okay, Apple sucks now, Google is the best. But what's interesting is that there is kind of potentially a new version of that coming out after so many years of that being iterated on, and it was a super successful, almost timeless design system because the update to it doesn't look that different, right? I think it's weird that we're getting to this kind of, what would you call it? Like point of diminishing returns for trying out different styles with digital products. It's like, we go heavy shadows, we go completely flat, we go somewhere in the middle, we stay somewhere in the middle, and that's pretty much what's happening right now. So we went from there to Gmail's, the new Gmail redesign isn't interesting enough, and maybe the reason for that is that people aren't really taking risks and create like having a strong enough opinion, and maybe that is sometimes related to having a leader who are willing to try out some crazy crap like Jeff Bezos. And I guess that's then what when you went down the Google hole.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Product Breakfast Club podcast.
Product Breakfast Club. Product
Breakfast Club. I like this episode so far. Hey, Jake.
Yeah. What's up, man?
We haven't talked about like cultural related things that we've been getting into, like books and games and movies. This is something that like went down really well with our audience at the start, and I thought we could do a quick little episode of the Culture Cast.
Culture Cast. Culture cast.
That was sung
to the tune of, did you like that? That was sung to the tune of Karma Chameleon by the Culture Club. And I don't know if you noticed.
I didn't.
You noticed because my singing was so good. But in the beginning of the episode, I was singing to the tune of Don't You Forget About Me, which is from the Breakfast Club soundtrack. So,
oh, Jesus.
I know that everybody but you who's listening picked up on that immediately because I'm such a good singer. Okay, well, Culture Cast.
Okay, Culture Cast. Jake, I try to seep myself in culture.
Did you say seep or steep?
Steep.
Steep, yeah, like a tea.
Steep is like putting a tea bag into some hot water.
Like a tea bag. Okay, you're like a tea bag in a hot water full of culture.
Steep myself deep in culture because it's sometimes good to get inspiration from non-tech world. Like, just go wild. Let your brain go free. I've got a few things to talk to you about.
Okay, Jake. All right.
A few book recommendations, maybe one book recommendation. Maybe I'll give you one other special recommendation. So I'm reading a book called The Gone World. It is a really, really cool sci-fi novel. It describes itself as a mixture between Inception and True Detective.
That's the way the book describes itself?
Yeah, like on, you know, like that's on the front cover.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, usually you don't see books describing themselves in terms of like movies and stuff.
That's a new thing. I mean, I don't think the author did it, but I remember reading before I bought the book Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer, which I really loved. It said, this is Lost meets something else. And I was like, I want to get into that. So this is Inception meets True Detective. It's a crazy, mind-bending, time travel, science fiction kind of whodunit story.
Oh, wow.
I'm really, really into basically anything with time travel where it kind of goes super techie and sciencey gets me really excited. And I have to say, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in this book, Jake. It's bending my mind.
It's called Gone World.
The Gone World.
The Gone World. G-O-N-E-W-O-R-L-D.
G-O-N-E. Okay. It's like
I
Gone
never know
Girl.
With your Irish accent if you're...
How the gone?
Oh, it's a gone world.
Hey, people complained about my Irish accent from last week, but they just don't understand. So The Gone World, really great book. Definitely jump into that if you're interested in science fiction, interested in time travel.
Do you think there's people who are interested in time travel who aren't interested in science fiction? They're just like,
Jake,
the time travel.
Let me just ask you, why did you ask that question?
Well, actually, I was just reading Harry Potter out loud to my younger son. So this would be the third time that I've read the Harry Potter series out loud. I read it once my wife when they were new. I read them out loud to my wife when we were reading them for the first time. I do voices and stuff. It's amazing.
You're so cute.
It's like Audible. Yeah. I'm so cute. I am super adorable. And then I read it to my older son and now I'm reading it to my younger son. Anyway, I don't want to spoil Harry Potter for anybody, but Prisoner of Azkaban has some time travel that is caused by magic. That's magically induced time travel, which is kind of cool. In case you just like your fantasy and time travel, it's out there.
You ruined
it. I kind of stole your thunder.
You ruined it for me. So yeah, The Gone World, fantastic book. I'll also give you another podcast recommendation, and I've been getting you into this as well, Jay.
If we talk about other podcasts, they're going to stop listening to this one. Once they hear another one, they're going to be like, why did I listen to that pile of crap? I could have listened to a real podcast.
I'm going to recommend a podcast to you called the Adam Buxton Podcast.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Oh, my God. Adam Buxton. That's B-U-X-T-O-N. And I've been listening to Adam Buxton for almost like 12 years now, but he used to have a show called Adam and Joe, hilarious show. It's not on anymore, but he has his own podcast now. This guy is completely crazy. He walks around with his dog and records himself talking while he's doing it. He has amazing guests like Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead and Bill Burr and all these crazy people. And it's just the funniest podcast I think I've ever heard.
There was an episode, you just told me about it last week, and I listened to a couple episodes, and the one that I really liked was with Spoon. Spoon is like one of my favorite bands, and they were on the show. It was great. Everything about Spoon was awesome. They were talking about the bands they like, and I was like, oh my God, I like all those bands. But the best part was this anecdote that Bill Buxton told about riding on a jet. I mean, it's just, it's great. Totally check that out. That's way better than the Product Breakfast Club. You are nuts to be listening to this.
Oh,
and not that.
My God. Why did you call him Bill Buxton, man? His name is Adam Buxton.
Oh, you know what? Bill Buxton is a famous designer. Adam Buxton. It's hard. Just, I don't have a lot of room in my head for more than one Buxton. So
it's
going to be one or the other.
So the last thing, I just want to squirt in one more recommendation for people out there. The last thing is a video game, which is only about 1 hour long, which will completely change your life. Okay, I'm promising you.
For the better?
Yeah, for the better. It's called The Stanley Parable. It's an amazingly written piece of art is the only thing I can say. It's not a video game. If you're not into video games, don't worry. This is not a video game, even though you kind of get it on a video game store. It's called The Stanley Parable. It's for Mac. It's for PC. It's just 1 hour long. It will completely blow your mind about how amazing, how funny it is. It's laugh out loud, amazingly written script. And if you just want to like get your brain into another mode and see what's happening in the world of video games, but without having to really play something for very long, try out The Stanley Parable. It will completely blow your mind.
So that's on
Mac
Steam?
Or PC?
Steam?
Steam. Yeah.
You
Steam
have to know
is where...
if you're like me and you don't even hardly know what Steam is, will you be able to figure it out?
Yeah, if you just Google The Stanley Parable for Mac and you'll find it's only like $11.
Okay, $11. Okay, all right.
That's me.
All right, I'll go out on a limb and try it. Okay, that's you. All right. That means
Culture Cast.
Pressure's on me for Culture Cast. Culture Cast. Culture Cast. This is a little intermission. Culture Cast. Intermission. Oh, intermission. Take a break. Get a snack. Come on back. Intermission. Culture Cast.
Did you get a snack yet?
You better get that snack. Okay.
I want to hear you eating it.
We're back to the Culture Cast. One of the big things, we talked about this briefly when I was setting up for the podcast, and we're not doing video anymore, so I won't bother holding it up to the camera, but I have a new foam pad to stand on while we do the podcast and while I'm at my standing desk. And that's been amazing.
That is amazing. So cultural. That's
it's so
cultural.
Yeah. It's the opposite, because if you see it, if you came into this room where I am and you saw me working, you'd be like, God, that guy is a dork. Like, I got like the standing desk and like the little foam pad, and it's not even flat. It's got like a little, my wife said it looks like a baboon's butt. It's got like all these contours, because basically it's so you can kind of stretch your foot anyway. If you look on Amazon, to bring it back to Amazon, it's awesome. It's so good. Man, it's just like saving my back.
What's it called?
I think it's called like a Topo ergonomic pad or something. If you do like standing desk mat, and you just get the funky shaped one.
Right.
That's a good one.
Do you think Jeff Bezos is going to post a picture of him with this baboon ass foot thing on Twitter over the next few weeks?
Probably will. I mean, one of the things was him like leaning up against this giant stuffed bear
in his
living room. And we're like,
yeah, I saw him posting a picture of him posing in front of The Rock's new movie, Rampage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird. He looks super serious and he's so fucking muscly at the moment.
Yeah.
Like Jeff Bezos is jacked. It's so scary.
And I think that was kind of the point. He was kind of like, look how buff I am. I'm the world's richest person and also.
And I'm buff.
But then I was like, Jeff, but you ruined it because you're just so weird. Like the whole thing does not make you look cool. That you're doing. That's not a cool person thing to do.
I want to touch his arms though.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to touch his arms too. But other than that, I was not having it at all. But okay, so my first culture thing was not that good.
You need to improve.
The other thing I've been reading lately, in addition to the Make Time book, which I've been reviewing before print. If you go to maketimebook.com, you can pre-order it. That's a little sneak that ad in there.
Nice.
But I've been rereading the 2001 series by Arthur C. Clarke. This is 2001,
right.
For those of you too young to know, is a science fiction book. And it's 50 years old this year. It's from 1968. The book was written alongside the screenplay for the movie, Stanley Kubrick collaborated with Arthur C. Clarke. They kind of collaborated both directions. And so the book is like slightly different than the movie, but you know, there's a lot of similarities, same basic plot, same super weird ending. 2001 is known for having this like really weird kind of psychedelic ending. But I've really been enjoying these books. I read them when I was a kid. I read them probably 15 years ago, and now I'm going to rereading them again. And one thing that I love about Arthur C. Clarke, it's really cool because he's writing in the 60s, and now I'm reading 2010, which he wrote in the 1980s. And then there's 2061 and 3001. So that's the whole, it's like a 4-book series.
Oh, I didn't know there was more books.
Yeah, and they're good. 3001 is pretty cool. What's cool about them, I think, is my favorite parts of the books is Arthur C. Clarke was like, especially the one in the 60s, and then he kind of just like continues this sort of spirit of the books throughout. It's like a really optimistic way of looking at what could have happened. Like if you extrapolate where the future of technology was going from the 60s, where it's like the space age, you know, rockets, and like what would happen if we were exploring space with people like in the ships, you know, if we like went to Jupiter, and there's this little bit of like this alien artifact that they're trying to explore. But most of what's going on is him just describing like these spaceships, how they work, the gravity, and like what's going on the planets when they look closely at them. And it's just, the guy really knew his science. I'm really enjoying him. Science fiction now, the bar, I think, is really high. Like, you got to kind of like,
oh, yeah.
You got to get in all these different intrigue. And the future, if you try to imagine the future now, it's like, oh, how crazy or weird can you make it and everything.
Yeah.
But you're trying to mash together different concepts. Arthur C. Clarke is very basic. It's very well executed. Sometimes the writing, there's like maybe a chapter or two here and there where I'm like, I could do without this. But a lot of it is really great and kind of fun. So I highly recommend taking a peek at that. And you can probably get those books used for like a buck somewhere.
Cool. How many cultures out of 5 would you give it, the series?
Oh.
I think we're rating them now. 5. I forgot to rate them.
Gosh. If you're a nerd, I feel like it's a 5 because it's a cultural thing for you to know about. Now, in terms of like pure enjoyable book like to read that you're just gonna like get into and love it, it's not a Game of Thrones situation, it's not a Harry Potter situation. You're not gonna fall into like a wormhole of not being able to stop reading it. You can stop reading these books, but it's maybe a 4, a 3.5 of 4
okay.
In terms of like just like pure fun, but a 5 in terms of like you'll just feel like you know what's going on better in the world of science fiction.
Cool. Great.
You got one good
more, or do you feel like you kind of maxed it out there?
Actually, this was something I just wanted to drop as like a teaser for the next
episode. Oh!
So today, actually, I don't know if my wife is here, so I'm going to speak. I'm going to get close to the microphone and kind of whisper, shh, don't tell. But I ordered my wife AirPods, and they arrive later today. She doesn't know. That's why the whispering, the quiet voice, she doesn't know about them. And this is really going to be a test of what is it like if somebody who thinks that a person who wears the AirPods is an idiot.
Yeah.
Because that's my wife. She thinks I'm an idiot wearing AirPods. What's it going to be like when she just gets a pair of AirPods and then has to deal with them? And like, I mean, the AirPods, there's that magical moment when you open them up and
it pairs
with your phone and it shows the picture on the phone.
Oh my God.
And it just works so well. And then you put them in and you're like, oh, it's just magic. But I don't know. We'll see what's going to happen. So
yeah,
I'll tell you next episode, we'll find out what happened. There was a good story about AirPods that online.
On the internet, you say?
On the internet. Remember you read that too. What was that called?
It was called the 3 stages of Apple criticism, I think. It's such a great article. I mean, the basic premise is that generally when Apple release something, people tend to hate on it immediately and think it's stupid.
Like me with Gmail.
Like everyone with the AirPods, I think, you know, everyone was like freaking out about them getting rid of the same with me. And eventually people like kind of grow to love them. But at the same time, there's always this like underlying current of victimhood, like Apple has done this to us, like Apple has forced us to wear these amazing things, the bastards. But I think we can get that into that next week. I also actually bought my wife AirPods and it was the same thing. It was like, they look so stupid. They look so dumb. Okay, my life has changed. I will never take these out again. So let's see if your wife has the same reaction. So Jake, I think I'm going to give this episode a 5 cultures out of 5.
Okay.
Now that we are rating the episode, I think we're good to finish up here. What do you think?
I think so. The time timer has like a sliver only.
Oh, nice.
So we did it. You actually timed it perfectly. It seemed like, I bet, there, do you hear it beeping? I don't know if you can hear it beeping.
Amazing.
But if you were listening to the episode all the way through, you were probably like, what? What's going on?
Yeah.
These guys
are perfectly orchestrated.
You stopped listening. You were doing other stuff. It was perfectly planned.
It was
perfectly planned. We've been working on this plan like 18 hours a day for the past week.
Never stopped.
We just nailed it. We nailed it. It's so hard to make it look like it's all rambly and off the cuff when it's all planned.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we
Jake,
got it.
I got to do something in this podcast episode. And I have a, I want to ask the lovely audience here to take a moment to give this podcast a 5-star review. Even if you only feel like it's worth a 3.5 cultures out of 5, it would be fantastic to give it a 5-star review if you're using the Apple Podcast app or iTunes. Unfortunately, you can only rate it there. That's the only place that matters. Because if you give it a rating, more people will listen to the podcast, basically, because it gets pumped up in the iTunes store. Now, I know you're hearing this right now and you're like, yeah, I'll do it later, or maybe I'll never do it. I know me. I know I haven't really rated that many podcasts in my life. But listen, look, we have no advertising on here. We're clearly not making any money out of this. No sponsor is ever going to put anything into this. For the sake of us, you know, building our personal brands and getting more people to listen to this, would be great if more people would listen to it. So I think it would be super sexy right now. Just we'll take a moment. Let's just take a moment.
So even if you only thought it was a 1-star podcast,
one culture,
give it an ironic 5-star review.
Yeah.
I think ironic 5-star reviews are just as appreciated. And if you're not on an iPhone right now, you could just tweet 5 stars.
Oh yeah.
And you don't even have to say what it's about.
Yeah.
You don't even have to mention anybody.
Tweet just 5 stars. It's notoriously difficult to share a podcast because it's just really weird. But if you're also listening to this, and if you really are a super fan of the Product Breakfast Club, share it on Twitter. Tell people you love it. The more people that listen to this, the more likely we are to not give up making it.
That's true. It gets harder. It will get harder to give up on it.
It makes it more difficult to give up on it. But we really do appreciate the reviews. We really do appreciate people sharing this. And we also, as you can see, if you share it on Twitter or on Instagram or anywhere, we do almost always respond to thank you for it. So we're humble as fuck, Jake. Okay, Jake, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at J-A-K-E-K. That is Jake K. Where can people find you, John?
You can find me on Instagram at jicecream or jicecream if you want to like say
how did
it.
How did you pick that?
Oh, man, I didn't really think I was going to be using Twitter or Instagram. And actually, my Snapchat name is J Daddy Stink, like because I was just testing it for a client and then I ended up using it. And then at conferences, I used to say, hey, follow me on Snapchat at J Daddy Stink. You can actually find me at J Daddy Stink, but I don't use Snapchat so much anymore. So
I don't even know how to use Snapchat.
Yeah, you don't even know how to use a phone, man. Don't even get me started. Like you and Instagram. We need to do a live stream on Instagram at some point, by the way. Product Breakfast Club, that stuff up.
You'll have to set that up, man. I got no idea what's
going on. I'll do it for you.
Instagram. Yeah.
All right, everybody. We love you so much for listening to this. Have an amazing day, and we hope you loved the whatever this is. Goodbye.
Ramblecast.
Product Breakfast Club. Product Breakfast Club.
Help. This one is not us. It's just me. It's not emulating anything.
Help me.